Yeah.
So the first thing I think I notice about you is your name. Your name is like this awesome 1950s sports writer's name, Sid Ziegler. Where does that come from? I it's like you should be working for the LA Times in 1950.
The CYD is it's just a family name that comes from Cyril. It's just a kind of a nickname. And then, it's funny you mentioned the 50s because Sid Charisse, the actress from the 50s, shares the same spelling of my name. So there is some 50s connection there.
No, I mean, one of the more famous sports writers of that time was Sid Ziff, who worked somewhere in L.A., either the L.A. Times, the L.A. Daily News, or Times Herald. So
Sid Ziff. I guess I got to dig into my journalism classes to go.
Yeah, no, but he spells it S-I-D, so.
Well, they usually do.
Right. Welcome to the Mighty and the Sword podcast. We're talking to Sid Ziegler here from Outsports.com, Huffington Post, various other sites and media. And I wanted to have you on. I mean, I know you've been a busy guy this month, but I think it's interesting what's going on, not just in sports, but in general. But, obviously in sports writing world, things are moving. It seems to me they're moving really, really fast as far as acceptance of gay athletes and just it seems like there's been a major paradigm shift, and it just seems like it's come really fast. Somebody who's worked behind the scenes and out front in this, if it's a movement or whatever it is, but has it seemed fast to you lately, just the way things are progressing?
Sure. I think part of that is because athletes are coming out of the closet and the people in the media are talking about it. And we at Outsports have made it our mission this year to write as many coming out stories as we possibly can. So I think that's one of the big reasons that we've had stories about college baseball players and football players and Michael Sam, obviously, and Jason Collins playing. So there have been a lot of media stories around. I think that's why people in the media say, are acknowledging that this is this issue is changing and there's a lot going on.
But if we're doing some kind of timeline where it's like we're talking, like say 1984, 1994, to 2012, it seems like the progression of the nation's thoughts about gay rights or gay marriage or any of that kind of stuff has just moved very, very slowly. I mean, even, Bill Clinton had this, the Defense of Marriage Act, but he was a liberal guy, and just where we are now, just a short time later, seems light years ahead, and we're talking about states are now basically saying, yeah, gay marriage is allowable in this state, and we're seeing more and more of that snowball effect. It just seems to me where people were 15, 20 years ago versus where they are now is just, it's just light years apart.
Sure. Well, I think the reason, again, I point to people coming out of the closet is what changes people's minds on this issue. And, the people who are straight and helping us, pave the way for our movement are super important. And getting rights and legal challenges also super important, but nothing changes people's minds like knowing gay people, and I think that as more of gay people have come out, that's really helped shift the conversation, because it's easy to sit there in your living room and say, I don't agree with gays, I don't agree with this, I don't approve of that. But then when your friend or your brother or one of your parents, when they come out of the closet and suddenly your position has a face to it, then it makes it a lot harder. So I think that's the big reason for the change is that people are just coming out.
I like to keep this podcast as timeless as possible, but because these issues are so prevalent today, it's a little more timely. And I wrote something yesterday for CBSSports.com about Steve Elkington, the PGA Tour golfer who said something on Twitter about ESPN is reporting Michael Sam is leading the handbag throw at NFL Combine, which was pretty crude and not very funny, and I I blasted him because he's had a history of saying other somewhat racist things on Twitter or getting into these Twitter fights. And I think most of the media seems to be on board with this shows my opinion about it's disgusting that he would say that and it's not funny and it's we should be moving past that. But if you look at the comments on this article, people are attacking me. People are attacking the media. People are saying this is not a story. Who cares? He's gay. It's not a story. It's not history. It seems like there's just a huge divide between journalists or advocates versus at least the people who comment on internet sites. I don't know. It just seems like there's a huge divide that hasn't been filled yet.
Why on earth are you reading anonymous comments on the internet? I mean, that... People are very brave and crass when they sit in their living room anonymously and no one can see who they are and they post their hate and nonsense. And look, people are very unhappy in their own lives. And many of them take to the internet and discussion boards and comment on stories to vent their frustration with their own lives. And I'm not making it a joke here. I'm not attacking them. This is really what's going on. People who are happy and love their life and love where they are in life, they don't go on the internet attacking people and trying to say that, you know, being gay is irrelevant or all this nonsense. So it's people frustrated with their own lives and you know, yesterday you and I were the target of their anger with themselves.
Well, and that's a good point. You should never read internet comments on articles you write, and I rarely do. This I wanted to read just because I knew it would probably be bad. But for all those who are listening, who are journalism students or whatever, do not read comments because it will not make your life any better whatsoever.
That is about right. They can be informative. I mean, I read internet comments, but I just don't let it affect me. It does not form my opinion about where our culture is or where the average sports fan is.
It's just very depressing because you think, well, I have friends. Everybody that I know is accepting of gay people, or I have gay friends and all this stuff. And so you think you surround yourself with these people, and then you read these people on the internet, whether or not that's true or not. It's just like, oh well, maybe we're not making as much progress as I would have thought. And it's just kind of sad to read it.
Oh no, we're making a ton of progress, and again, just because some knucklehead says something anonymously, that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't even mean that they don't like or approve of gay people or same-sex marriage. It truly only means they are very frustrated and angry at their own life. That's it, period. There's no other message to take from those comments.
Before we get into Michael Sam, because I was at the NFL Combine and I was at that press conference that he held, before we get into that, I wanted to just kind of delve into your background a little bit so people who don't know who you are can learn. I know you helped found Outsports.com in 1999, but just take me through the arc of your career and how you got to be where you are.
Well, let's see. I went to Stanford out of high school and majored in communication there, and I wrote a little bit for a couple of the newspapers on campus, but it wasn't a ton. And then I graduated and got a job at Disney. I was developing TV programming, some of the movies and TV shows and concerts for Disney Channel for about 5 years. And then in 1999, while I was still at Disney, actually, my friend Jim Bozinski and I, we played football together, flag football, and we were on a vacation, and we just started talking about the internet was big. I mean, it was a hot, hot topic then because people were buying companies for crazy amounts of money and launching all these new websites and so we were talking about the internet and sports and gay people and we realized that there was no real place for people like us to talk about sports in a way that, you know, with other gay people. And so we just kind of decided to create a little website. It's crazy to think about looking back. And it was just a couple pages. It was mostly NFL content. We added a lot of humor to it. We focused on the NFL and we had, I remember there being an award we gave every week, the Wade Phillips Memorial Bonehead Coach of the Week Award. And so we just started writing about really mainstream sports from a quote-unquote gay perspective. It was very stereotypical. And then quickly people started finding us and asking us for ways to meet other gay people in the sports and talk about college basketball and other things. And so it just started to morph into something different where we were focusing on gay issues in sports rather than more so than sports from a quote unquote gay perspective. And so we just kept morphing the website and kind of the direction of sports took us in this direction where we were writing, you know, more about issues than just, you know, just having just, you know, just writing about nonsense in the NFL.
Did you, when you were growing up, did you, or were at Disney, were you reading any kind of, you know, I don't know if this is the right term, but gay magazines or gay newspapers or?
No. There was none of that. We've always said that OutSports is a sports site first and it's gay second. I grew up on Cape Cod and there was no being gay about my life. I was a pretty good track and field and cross country runner and that's just kind of, you know, being gay was not a part of what I was would allow myself to be.
So when did you start? When did that transformation happen?
Well, after college, my girlfriend broke up with me, and I actually met a guy playing Ultimate Frisbee. I played Ultimate Frisbee at Stanford, and I was down here at UCLA playing pickup, and there was another guy playing Ultimate Frisbee, and it was the first time where there was such an attraction to somebody else, male or female, that I was like, oh, well, this is, I don't know what this is, but this is something that I can't ignore anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's really how that happened.
So when you decide to start outsports.com, I mean, I wonder if there's some kind of internal fight with you or with the typical gay man or gay woman about, well, I'm going to either slash hide or kind of not make it so much a part of my life or my vocation. And you go ahead and start this website that is, like you said, sports first and gay second, but still, I think if you ask people about OutSports, they would say, oh yeah, that's the gay website about sports.
Yeah.
Was there any kind of internal struggle with you saying, well, you know what, I don't think I want to put myself out there quite this much, or was it always like pretty gung-ho, let's do it?
No, I never even thought about that, What it's interesting, though, that I think to you, are you gay?
No.
So to straight people, what they see first about our website is the gay part. And what gay people see first about our website is the sports part. And I think that's because you're seeing something new and different because you frequent sports sites. What sets OutSports apart is that it's inherently gay.
Right.
And what sets our publication apart from people used to reading The Advocate and Toll Road and Queerty and other gay publications is that it's about sports. So, you know, for us, everything that we write about on OutSports has to be sports-related. It doesn't have to be gay-related. It has to be sports-related. So for us, we put sports first because that's just how we look at it. But it's interesting that straight people seem to see the gay first and the sports second, whereas the gay people see it the other way around.
Yeah, well, I guess that's interesting. It's a matter of what you read and the perspective you're coming from is how you're going to look at it, I guess. But do you have, I mean, I don't know if there's any way to even break this down, but do you know how many gay people read the site versus straight people? Is that even a demographic you can figure out?
Yeah, Google Analytics hasn't figured out how to parse that yet, so I couldn't guess. I would say this, that now, in the last year, the number of straight people reading us has increased. We've always been read by, you know, people at ESPN and HBO Real Sports and the New York Times. But recently, our stuff is, and I think part of that is due to us being acquired by SB Nation. The number of straight people reading us has clearly gone up considerably.
Yeah, the SB Nation thing was interesting because this is becoming a mainstream site who are kind of buy up sites, I guess. And that, I guess, what did they do it a couple years ago? When did they buy you guys?
Yeah.
How did that impact you guys as far as, I don't know, maybe readership or how did that, what did that do for you?
Well, I think that it gave us a better platform, not just what the website looks like and technologically, but also, you know, once a mainstream sports company says yes, you know, we are putting our weight behind this publication, it changed our profile. So that was a big thing. People started taking notice of us. We weren't just some little blog on Front Page and WordPress. We were suddenly, you know, we were suddenly Outsports.com on part of SB Nation, on Chorus, which is their pretty highly touted technological platform. So it really helped raise our profile in the eyes of a lot of people in the sports world in particular.
So let's get to Michael Sam, because the whole thing, the way this came out was really interesting, and you wrote something on Outsports, kind of the behind-the-scenes thing. Obviously, Jason Collins had already happened, but it was unclear at that point whether or not he was ever going to play in the NBA again.
Yeah.
So that I don't know if he had become more irrelevant because it seemed like his career was over, but people weren't talking about him like they were when he first, you know, came out of the closet. And now you have Michael Sam, and this whole idea of meeting or having dinner with all of these people, whether they're former gay athletes or guys like Chris Cluey, who's been on this podcast, very outspoken against marriage equality, and Brendan Ayan Medejo. And I know you were there. I'm just interested in that whole scene about Michael Sam's decided that he's going to do this, and there's like a meeting, there's like this brain trust meeting. What was that experience like?
Well, it wasn't really a brain trust meeting. So Michael decided he wanted to do this, and he hired an agency and then fired the agency a couple of days later and hired these two guys, Cameron Weiss and Joe Barkett of Empire Athletes, and that was early January. And they brought in Howard Bragman, who's a publicist who's taken a bunch of athletes out of the closet and is a good friend of mine. That was about mid-January. And he and I and the agents and a couple other people just started talking about what the strategy should be like, and you know, Howard would have an idea and he'd bounce it off me, and I, you know, it was a great working relationship. And so leading up to, you know, we were going to release the story on that Monday, and ended up, you know, having to release it on Sunday because we were afraid somebody was going to jump the gun. But that Saturday night, the night before he came out publicly, there was a dinner at Howard Bragman's house, and it was important to Howard that Michael felt like he had a support system and that he met a lot of these people. So he invited Brendan Ayan Medejo and Chris Cluey, a couple former NFL players who've been very vocal about gay rights. He invited Dave Copay, who was the first professional athlete to come out of the closet. He was an NFL running back in the 60s and 70s. Billy Beane was there, and Wade Davis, a couple former professional athletes. He invited Jason Collins, but Jason had another obligation that night and just couldn't come. And it was me and Jim Bozinski, my business partner, and my partner Dan. So it was about a dozen people at Howard's house, literally just having Chinese food, and I made peach cobbler and good wine, and we were just there to talk and let Michael know that we were there to support him. And it was a really good night. It really wasn't a brainstorming session or anything like that. It was just a bunch of people kind of getting together. The quiet before the storm, you would say.
I read somewhere that the I can't remember where, but I read that peach cobbler was amazing. So congratulations.
That's what I was the first time I'd ever made it, and I was with my, I asked Michael that afternoon, what do you want me to make for dessert? And he said peach cobbler, and I said, well, what about chocolate chip cookies? He said peach cobbler. I said, well, what about apple cobbler? He said peach cobbler. So all right, I guess I'm making peach cobbler.
No, but I was doing research on you, and I saw I can't remember where I saw, but somebody said you made this. You made this awesome peach cobbler. So, if we ever meet, I would in person. I would like some peach cobbler.
But, I know my way around the kitchen.
But I mean, for it before, but in this calm before the storm, for people who are advocates of this and have been waiting for somebody to kind of show their colors like this, was it? It must have been an exciting time, or was it a nerve-wracking time, or? For you, who's been at Outsports since for like 15 years, what did it mean to you and to the journalism community, do you think?
Well, when Michael came out?
Well, just at that dinner, you know it's going to come out, but it hasn't happened yet. And
yeah, you know what's funny? So this is – and I didn't really kind of sit back and realize this and take it in until about a week later. And I was at Howard Bragman's birthday dinner on Monday, and we were kind of all – chatting about this, and his partner Chuck and Billy Beane was there, and it was interesting looking back now, having been in the middle of what I believe will end up being the biggest sports story of the year before it happened, and knowing how it happened and being at that dinner and thinking this is going to be a big story, but not really. I didn't think it was going to be, I knew it was going to be huge. I just didn't think it was going to consume the media and the sports media the way that it did. And so, you know, looking back at it, it was interesting and fascinating to be there and knowing this is going to happen and knowing when and where and how and who. And it was interesting. It was kind of neat and nerve-wracking. No, it was just looking back, it was exciting. And what made it really exciting was, so after that dinner, Michael wanted to go out to the clubs. Mm-hmm. And we said, no, that's not a good idea. You have a big day. The next morning he had to do interviews with ESPN and the New York Times. But he was dead set. I remember him saying, you know, Michael, that's not a great idea. He said, I'm a 24-year-old man. I'm going out. So we went to a karaoke bar and he got up and sang karaoke, and then we went to the big gay bar in Los Angeles is called the Abbey. It's I think the biggest gay bar in the whole country, and we were there for an hour or so, and it was packed and drinking, and I remember in the Abbey looking around thinking all these people have no idea who this person is, and the fact that 24 hours from now, they're all going to know who he is. And if it was 24 hours later, he would be mobbed by these people. So that was interesting, kind of being able to look at the scene and nobody else in the room really knows what's going on.
Right. That's awesome. So, like I said, I was at the Combine when the NFL Combine, when we're taping this, it was last week, and he had this big press conference, and he came out really strong and said, basically, I wish people would see me as a football player, not as a gay football player, and that's just not going to be the case at this point, maybe someday down the line. But what's interesting, I think most people that have come out publicly have supported him. I mean, NFL players. I guess Terrell Thomas, I think it was, the Giants cornerback, who came out and said, well, you know, how are we supposed to act around this guy? And I think that I don't know if that's a code for I don't want this guy on my team or whatever. And I kind of dismissed it at like, well, maybe it is code. But let me tell you this story. So when I'm writing this for CBSSports.com, this Michael Sam press conference, and most of the guys who came in for press conferences came through a certain door, and they went to the podium or they went to a table so they could be interviewed. Michael Sam kind of appeared out of nowhere. He came in through a different door, and like all of a sudden there's this big like hustle of people to get to his podium, and there was no announcement that he was coming, and it was like poof, there he is. So after the press conference, I'm writing or trying to formulate a lead, and I'm thinking, well, the idea of he kind of came out of nowhere, people were hustling, and I was trying to describe it, and I said, well, he came through a back door. And I thought, well, shit, I can't write that, right? I mean, so, and it wasn't a back door. It was a back door, but I ended up writing a side. I said side door, even though that wasn't as accurate because I didn't want, like, you know, sometimes you can kind of nudge and say, hey, look how clever I'm being here subtly. But I didn't want, you know, there's no way I could do that and not look like a jerk or like I was making fun of the situation, even though that wasn't the intent at all. So now I can kind of see how I structured the story or how I wrote it was kind of affected, you know, by Michael Sam. Yeah. I mean, is that, I don't know. I felt weird about it, and I felt weird telling people about it afterwards because it was kind of a weird thing. I couldn't wrap my head around it because.
Well, I think it's funny. Let me give you an example of. A pitfall that could happen if you if you had gone with the, he came through a back door,
right,
which
right.
is funny.
Yeah.
Last year, or was it 2 years ago? Anyhow, I guess 2 years ago. Anyhow, Jeremy Lin was the talk of the NBA, right? He'd shown up on the scene, coming off the bench. I can't remember, he was starting at the time. Like, he was just scoring at will, winning games with off-balance jump shots. He had a bad game at a bad time. It was about last February, 2 Februarys ago. And the ESPN headline was, a chink in the armor.
Right, I remember, yeah, I remember that.
And the firestorm that erupted, you know, it has nothing to do with him being Asian, but the double entendre that was there was so racially insensitive that person got in big trouble. So
got fired.
Did they get fired?
I think so.
Well, anyhow, it was bad. So, you know, being a little cautious, even if you think that, well, maybe I shouldn't do this as a journalist for your own career, it's probably not a bad idea to be careful when that kind of stuff pops into your head. Though I would have said, greatest headline ever.
Well, no, and I told some friends about it afterward, and I mentioned that chink in the armor story or the headline because I'm pretty sure the guy got fired for it. And even though he said it was accidental, and I believe him, I mean, I could have used it accidentally and. You know, it could have been bad. And now I didn't think about having to be cautious about the way you write certain things because of the double entendre. But I guess you do have to be careful about your word choice.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, issues of gender and race and sexual orientation and religion, you have to be careful. You have to think a little bit. And, you know, of course, people make mistakes, and I'm not sure that, you know, I mean, if the headline was Michael Sam came to the back door, it was your lead sentence, it's a different thing. But I don't know, if it was your headline, people would have scratched their head like, that's it, really, that was too precious to be an accident.
Yeah, I know. You know, my theory about, one of my theories about Michael Sam, you know, people wonder whether he's not going to be drafted. And he did not, you know, if you talk to people who watch film, they say, yeah, he was the SEC Defensive Player of the Year, but I don't know if he's really cut out for the NFL because he's too small to be defensive end, he's too slow to be a linebacker. There's not a great situation for him necessarily. And then he didn't have a very good combine as far as measurements and running the 40 and things like that. But I wonder if, because after he made his announcement.
You know what's so funny about that?
What's that?
I love how people, when you listen to athletes and former athletes, they talk about his tape. They talk about what he did on the field. Journalists get all focused on numbers and the combine as though a couple hours of jumping over, hitting pylons and running a 40 is somehow going to make him not an NFL player anymore. So it's just funny when I hear Warren Sapp talk about it. He says, I love that guy's tape. That's what I focus on.
Yeah.
But journalists, they had some numbers now, and all of a sudden, Michael Sam isn't an NFL player.
Well, I think at this point, too, it's all nobody knows, and it's all a bunch of smoke and mirrors much of the time. So what you hear is not necessarily true. But getting back to my point, after he made his announcement, a bunch of NFL teams came out in support of him and said, you know, we'd love to have him on the team, or we support him. And I wondered, if he's not drafted, it's not just the regular NFL football fans going to be watching this draft. It's going to be a lot more people because of Michael Sam. I wonder if there's going to be some kind of – if a team is going to draft him. Oh, I don't know if it's going to be directed by the NFL or not, because so many people are watching, because the NFL wants to be this progressive league. I wonder if that plays into it at all. Have you thought about that at all?
The NFL's desire to be progressive will affect his draft stock?
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying – I don't know. I mean, I'm saying if the NFL says, listen, we need somebody to draft this guy because there's going to be so many people watching, it's going to look bad if he's not drafted. And because there's going to be so many people watching this thing, it's not going to be about whether he can play or not. It's going to be about he wasn't drafted because he's gay. Is that – or am I completely off on that?
I'm sure that no matter what happens, the media will point to his sexual orientation and say that's why it happened. If he gets drafted, they'll say that, well, the NFL told somebody to draft him. If he doesn't get drafted, they'll say that's because of his sexual orientation, too. So, you know, the NFL teams are focused on winning football games, and his ability to help them win football games as a special teams guy, as a situational pass rusher, who knows, as a defensive rookie of the year, I don't know how he's going to play. That's what NFL teams are focused on. But the media continues to beat the drum that the NFL is homophobic and it's going to take the league stepping in to mandate that he be drafted for him to be drafted.
But is that a good thing? If the NFL is beating this drum, is that
good or is
that bad? The
NFL isn't beating that drum. The media
is beating that drum. Right, the media is beating the drum. Right. Is that a good thing or is that annoying or what?
It's just untruthful. Again, the people in the media continue to refuse to acknowledge that the sports world has changed, that NFL players, even if they don't support same-sex marriage, will ultimately accept a gay teammate and everything will be fine. But people in the media who haven't played in the NFL, who don't understand these issues, will continue to ask questions about the challenge that it's going to be and the struggle and point to the NFL having to force teams to draft him and his draft stock dropping and give all these reasons for him not being drafted, like he didn't run the 40 fast enough, when the NFL teams and NFL players are just on a different page from the media.
Well, I assume you saw his press conference at the combine. What did you think?
Yeah, his press conference was great, and he answered the questions really well, and I thought he presented himself well, and I watched him at the combine, and you know what? He didn't have a great combine. He didn't have a bad performance. He didn't have a terrible performance. He didn't have a great performance. It was somewhere in between, and I don't think that anything that happened at the combine is going to affect his draft stock at all. I'm sure there'll be a team here that dings him for this and a team there that liked what they saw from the press conference. He obviously can handle himself well in front of the media. And so I just don't think that ultimately the combine is going to have much effect on his draft stock. I think he was a third to fifth round pick before the combine. I think that's probably what he is now.
But the questions there, I mean, I saw some criticism of the questions that were asked at that press conference. So much of it was focused on the gay thing. Was that, did you think that as well? Was it just too much gay football player versus Michael Sam football player?
Well, look, I don't know if it was too much. I mean, it was to be expected because He came out and then refused every single interview that was asked. After that first day he came out, he talked to the New York Times, ESPN, Outsports, Sports Illustrated, and I believe the student newspaper at Missouri. He did 5 interviews at that first day and no more after that. So it was to be expected that this was the first time much of the media had the ability to ask him questions. So it was understandable, and I think everybody expected that that's what would happen.
Let me touch on one other subject that's kind of interests me before I let you go. You know, was it last year, last offseason? There was this article written by, I don't even know the website, that kind of tried to out Kerry Rhodes, former Cardinals defensive back. And he was, you know, the article, you know, it showed pictures of him and his assistant, and it was kind of disgusting to read. And as far as just the intent of this article, basically to out Kerry Rhodes, who then adamantly has ever since said, "I'm not gay." That kind of journalism, I don't know. It seems to me it's pretty disgusting, pretty despicable stuff. I'm just interested in your take on websites or people who are trying to out athletes, whether they're gay or not, without their permission. That seems to me that might be some of the worst stuff you can do as a journalist.
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, those websites aren't run by journalists. They're run by gossip hounds, and there's a big difference. And, you know, OutSports has a policy, always has, that we will not out people in sports. We're just not going to do it. It's not our role. Every once in a while, we'll have fun. Like, every April 1st, we run a story about Terrell Owens coming out of the closet, right? So we'll have fun with it. But when you out somebody, that means you have information, you believe they're gay, you know they're gay, and against their wishes, you tell the world that they're gay. Now, there are certain circumstances where I believe that, quote-unquote, outing is not off-limits. For example, if you see an NFL player with an attractive young man at a gay bar hanging out together, I think it's fair game in a public place to say, you know, snap a picture and post something that these two people were together. And so, you know, I think once athletes or anybody steps out into the public, I think it's fair game. But that's really not what was going on here. This was posting of private pictures and really, you know, somebody with an agenda trying to out this man. So we have OutSports has only covered it when Kerry has talked about it. We haven't really we didn't cover it at first until he addressed it. And the same thing with Aaron Rodgers, the attempt to out him recently. Right. You know, we only discussed it once Aaron said something. So it's, you know, again, these aren't journalists; these are gossip hounds.
Are there going to be? Is this just going to continue to snowball as far as more and more athletes are going to continue to come out of the closet and eventually make this a moot issue, I guess, because it will be so prevalent that it won't matter anymore? Do you think that's going to be the case relatively soon?
Yeah, I think this is going to be a story for quite a while, in the next couple of years. But at some point, when an athlete comes out in the pros, it just won't be as big of a story. I think there are a bunch of barriers to break. I think a superstar coming out in the prime of his career. I think they still haven't had an NHL or Major League Baseball player. So, and I think the NFL, any NFL player coming out for it will be a big story for a while. So I think that, you know, we're seeing not the beginning, but the middle or the beginning of the end. But it's going to go on for quite a while. It's still a lot of interest.
Sid Ziegler from OutSports.com. You can find him at Twitter at Sid Ziegler, CYDZEIGLER. Thanks so much, man. It was really fun talking to you, and I hope that we continue to progress, and it keeps getting better and better for people who want to come out of closets. So thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.